case, the United States versus Singletary. Mr. Irwin.
Good morning, judges.
Good morning, counsel.
Okay, thank you. I want to talk to you about two issues today. One of those is the motion to sever and motion to eliminate in this matter that the court had ruled on, and also the other issue then being the whether or not my client should have received a third point off for acceptance of responsibility. What we have in this case is that probably a week before the trial was set to begin, the court heard a motion to sever and motion limine, and it talked about count two being filed. The count two was a charge that talked about September 8th, the 2001 event involving the murder of a Tyree Cunningham, and it put a gun enhancement on my client, a gun charge on her.
On this motion in limine, though, isn't your biggest problem the fact that she did an unconditional plea, so she waived her right to have that decided or to have it resolved by this court?
Well, here's the thing is that I really think it goes to count two, and count two was dismissed, so she never really pled to it. So that's why I think that it's proper for the court to go ahead and hear it. I think because the court's ruling on that count two really was a... It balanced the scale to cause her to go ahead and plead to count one. My client had been contemplating going to trial all along on these cases, and once the court ruled that... all the evidence of September 8th is going to come into evidence at trial, then my client thought that would be too prejudicial for her to receive a fair trial from a jury because of the fact about Tyree Cunningham maybe not being dead, being stomped on, being put out in the woods, and things of that nature.
So you're saying that when someone enters a plea on one count and gets another count dismissed, that isn't waiver of whatever issues related to that second count? I mean, if I'm understanding your argument, and do you have any authority for that?
Judge, I do not, but I would like permission maybe to try to submit them to you like within 10 days or something like that, from today's hearing.
The government raised waiver in their response brief.
I know they did, and on that, I don't see how my client... Can be said to have weighed that issue when she had an open plea and the count two, which this goes to.
But you didn't respond to that in your reply, the waiver argument, did you?
I did not.
Yeah, so you had an opportunity. I mean, the chief can determine whether you can file something supplemental, but normally that goes into your reply because the government put it right there that, you know, there was a big problem with waiver.
Well, I thought that went to count one, but not to count two. I think it's kind of a circular argument here we get into because that they're so interrelated. I think the fact that when they charged count two, they said that it related to count one, that the drug offense related to count one. But at the sentencing hearing, the court found that the evidence of the September 8th event were not relevant to count one, and the court at the sentencing hearing didn't want to hear any evidence about the shotgun, about the murder of Tyree Cunningham.
But there was no carve out in the plea to preserve this issue.
I'm sorry.
There was no carve out in the plea to preserve this issue, well, whether it fell under one or two.
Well, there was not, Judge. There was not. The other issue then I want to talk about whether or not my client should receive a third point off for assessing responsibility. And as to that issue, my client was in a position where the government had filed a count two, subsequent to filing a count one, and it kind of put my client in a box where that she couldn't go ahead and plead to this count because she didn't feel like she was good for it. Now, that count was eventually dismissed in the plea agreements with the government, and you can note through the the court's statements through the two-day sentencing hearing we had, that the court found that that was not relevant to count one. I think there's a good faith basis for my client not pleading until the government removed that impediment to the plea, which is the count two out there. I think it's almost analogous to a case where that maybe someone goes to trial and is acquitted on an account, and that can't be held against them for not pleading to it because they were acquitted on a certain count that they wouldn't plead to. That's why I think in this case here that there's sufficient evidence to establish that this count two was not related to count one, and my client was well justified in not pleading to it early.
Do you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I did, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sir Irwin. Ms. Robertson.
May it please the Court, my name is Amanda Robertson, I represent the United States, the appellee. And as Judge Williams pointed out, the government's position that the motion in limine issue is waived, and it's waived for a couple of reasons. It's waived, number one, by the defendant's guilty plea, which was not a conditional plea, did not reserve anything. So clearly, that waived the motion in limine. But it's also waived because the defendant filed a joint motion to sever and motion in limine, which the defendant attached to his brief. And on appeal, the defendant is not denying the district court, or not appealing the district court's ruling on the motion to sever. So what the court did is the court found that the two counts should not be severed. And once he found that the two counts should not be severed, he appropriately found that the motion in limine was moot. So even if the guilty plea did not waive the motion in limine issue, the issue would be waived because there was the district court denied the motion to sever, and that issue is not on appeal. Finally, count one was an element of count two, which is further evidence on why the count should not be severed, and the district court was appropriately ruling on the motion in limine. Regarding the acceptance of responsibility, this defendant came in and pled guilty on the day of the scheduled jury trial. The government had fully prepared to proceed to trial. The court had allotted that week to try the defendant on this case. All law in this district supports that that is not timely. The defendant did not notify the court, the government in time, so to keep it from expending its resources. And finally, the defendant maintains that somehow he couldn't go in and plead to count one if that's the count that she believed she was good for. There was nothing standing in the way of the defendant entering a plea of guilty to count one at any time. She could have proceeded to trial on count two. And also, count one was the only count against this defendant for over 60 days prior to the government superseding to add count two. So the government believes that the claim that she fled as soon as she realized the government might dismiss count two is a disingenuous claim. We believe that all the findings and the sentence of the district court were appropriate and ask this court affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Robertson. Mr. Irwin?
Back to the point whether or not my client could have timely pled in this matter. Yes, it's true that there was a 6-day period of time which my client could have come in and pled. However, though, during that time frame, we have to receive the discovery, we have to digest it. My client was released on bail at the time. She was in North Carolina, and there was a lot of discovery in this case. You can also see from the court's comments at the sentencing hearing that some of the witnesses of the government were less incredible by saying, like Mr. Prince Washington, the court commented that, well, one thing you can say about his testimony is inconsistent. The court commented upon a Blair Tibbs, saying things like, I don't think Mr. Tibbs could tie his own shoes unless someone told him. Things of that nature. But there's a lot to go into this case as far as what my client was looking at as far as relevant conduct. And you can see where the pre-sentence report came back over 2 kilograms, and we came in at sentencing then somewhere between 500 grams to 1.5 kilograms. There was wide ranges there on things. It wasn't just a cut-and-dry case. That's why it took quite a bit of time to try to decide what to do in this case.
And was there any request to continue the trial date and say to the court, you know, we had a lot of material to digest and want to evaluate whether we want to plead, so can we kick the trial date? That would have bought you time and then not had you against the gun, because the problem is just the case law and the eve of trial is very problematic for you. Was a request like that made to continue? Do you know?
I can't remember right now about looking at my file. I do know this. I do know that the counsel and myself had conversations about that count two being a problem all along. I do know that we had talked to the Friday before trial that, and we had a lady and gentleman's agreement that we weren't going to go to trial on a Monday because the government had got permission from her authorities to go ahead and dismiss count two. It seems like this is analogous to a contract problem, like where that the government's offered, if they were a seller in a situation, saying, here, we want you to buy this house, but to buy this house, you've got to buy a lot in another town somewhere off. And we're like, well, we don't want this other lot until the town somewhere off. We would love to enter a plea agreement with you and love to come in and get an agreement with you, but we don't want the second piece of property that they're offering. And finally, when they took it out of the deal, then we're ready to come in and plead to it then. We felt like we were frustrated, and there's an impediment placed by the government, and only they can control that, whether it's dropping or not. I tried to resolve that issue with a motion to sever and a motion in limine, but that failed. And I feel like that my client acted upon her first opportunity, and I'm asking this court to try to carve out a niche for a situation like my client had here, where that there was a roadblock put into her coming in and pleading early.
Thank you, Mr. Irwin. Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Irwin, an additional thanks to you for accepting this appointment on appeal. All right, the case is taken under advisement, and we will.